Okay, I'm sorry. It's Jay Nemrod. You're listening to the Life Autistic. This is episode number 724. Sheesh. I apologize. It's been a very, very, extremely, horribly long time since I have made a recording. And honestly, I traveled a ton last week. Oh, you know, I gotta bring you guys up to date. I gotta bring you guys up to date. I decided that I needed to improve my my nerd credentials. So I went and got I went and took a test to get my ham radio license. And I can't say I studied for the technician test. I think I read through some stuff, and you know, I didn't feel like I would do too bad. I went through all the question pool that you're supposed to go through. Well, I don't know if you're supposed to. I said, you know, every possible question they could ask you on the test, they put together in a pool. And you could actually look at that, you know, for a 35-question test, you're studying 400 questions. Or you're looking at 400 questions. And when I went through it, I answered the great majority of them without even thinking much about it. So I said, well, you know, I could probably pass the technician test. Well, then I went through the general thing, and I was starting to wonder. Now, you have to know that I'm a pretty good test taker because I've learned a few things about human nature. And I've got a pretty broad schema and a pretty, you know, and it can usually at least let me make an intelligent guess about what the right answer might be. And that's usually all I really need. You know, you can throw any random test. If I could test out of probably a PhD program, I might be able to get a PhD. If you could test out, of course you have to, you know, they kind of want you to do research and and add to this thing. Someday I'll get my PhD when it's interesting to me, I guess. People say, well, you just don't decide to do it one day. And you go, you know what? I'll wait another couple of years until it's possible. And I think it really is right about now. I was just going to a place where you could, you know, if you get published and it's pretty highly acclaimed piece of work, or if you publish quite a bit, they'll just practically, you know, if you hand them $12,000, they'll practically give you a PhD. And this is a real life college. This isn't some kind of diploma mill. I know about those. Anyway, so I studied a bit on the general on the general test. Now, you have to understand that when you go and you take the tests for your amateur radio licenses, you can take all the tests. It costs the same. You know, you basically pay for the testing session. And so I just said, hey, what the heck? So I went. I passed the technician test 100%. You know, I didn't miss any questions. I took the general test, which is the next step up, and passed that. I think I only missed like four. Then I said, well, you know, what the heck, I'm going to take the advanced test. I was four questions away from passing the advanced test, a test for which I did not study at all. So I thought that was really interesting. Am I going to go and get my advanced radio license? $14, why not? You know, am I going to study for it a little bit? Yeah, I will. I studied a little bit for the general, and I think it helped me. You know, because I don't have a lot of experience in it, you know. You don't typically get the extra test, pardon me. When I say advanced, I indicate the fact that I really haven't looked at this too strongly, even though I almost passed the thing anyway. It just goes to show you, testing doesn't indicate that you're any good at anything, you know. It just means you're good at tests. And I'm decent at tests. I don't know how really good I am. But I thought it was really interesting. Anyway, so that's something I've done. I qualified for a general class amateur radio license. I haven't gotten it yet. But it'll come. You know, it may be a few weeks. You know, maybe around Christmas. You know, and then people say, well, Jay, what are you going to do with it? And you go, I don't know. It was just a credential. You know, I'm not going to say I'm really going to actually do anything with it. You know, I don't know. But there is this wonderful, I don't know if it's wonderful, but it was pretty, I thought it was pretty interesting. This thing called HamScope. Now, you don't have to have an amateur radio license to use HamScope. And it's basically kind of a, almost kind of a ham radio simulator. It's all on the computer. It's all on the internet. You don't have to have a radio to do it. And but it's set up exactly like it. It has the same kind of it has simulated propagation issues, you know, certain times of day it'll go better, you know, other times of day it won't. You know, and it's divided up into bands. It's actually a pretty good simulator. And I've just been listening to it because honestly, I have no clue how to operate. What's appropriate operating practice? I mean, technically I do because I passed the test, but that part of the test is figuring out whether you have the ability to do this. But you know, neither here nor there. Anyway, I was listening to that. So, you know, I don't know. I think I'll screw around with that for a little while. Because, you know, I don't really want to pay a lot of money for, you know, because I could build my own transceiver, and I might do that. There's some really expensive ones for like PSK31, which is a certain type of emission. It's digital. I think that would be cool because you can get like an 80 meter version of that for like, you know, $55-$60, you know, and I can put it together, you know, solder it together, and we can put a little case and I think that might be fun, although 80 meter, you know, antennas are pretty they're pretty big. Just by the nature, the wavelength is long, so you kind of have to take that into a thing. I'm, you know, I basically got my amateur radio thing because I think I could, and there was really nothing stopping me from doing it. And that's basically it. Not really knowing what I would ultimately do with it, except to say, you know, it would be good to have the ability, if there was an emergency, to be able to use the radio and do that. So I do need to kind of get a little bit of experience so I'm not an absolute doofus when I get on there, because I don't want to be a doofus. You know, it's not part of my nature. Or I would prefer it not to be. How about that? Oops. I didn't bring any of my stuff. God, man, I am scatterbrained, in case you didn't know. I am very scatterbrained. It's because there's too much stuff, I think, swirling around in my head. I didn't bring any of my stuff in case I need to overnight. But frankly, I'm 1 hour away from home. It's no problem just to go home. So I'll just come home. It's good. It makes my wife happy, too. Okay, let me see. What? I didn't have the headset for... a couple of days, scatterbrain, didn't put it back where it was supposed to be, so therefore I didn't have it with me. That's why, you know, people say, well, Jay's kind of organized, and you go, well, no, the only reason why I'm organized is because if I'm not organized, I don't have my stuff with me. You know, and I don't consider that organization so much as just having the stuff there. You know, everything has its place. And if like, let's say, for instance, there's only like two places where I put my shoes at night. So that when I wake up, typically they're in one place, they're in my closet. Or they're going to, well, there's three places. Or beside my bed because I was too lazy to put them away. Or they were in the living room because they were watching TV and I kicked my shoes off. That's really the only three places they will ever be. If somebody were to pick up my shoes and take them somewhere else, I'd be somewhat sunk. Now, I know that's true of other people, but, you know, I would be having troubles. You know, I would have to shut down everything else I was doing, everything else I was thinking, and worry about shoes. You know, I also almost had to meditate upon the whole shoeness of reality so that I could find my shoes. Yeah, you know, I guess, you know, I don't know if normal people go through the same thing. I don't know. They don't worry about that. I would. I would get really anal about my shoes. You know, and I notice it in the twins. When they can't find their shoes, oh, the world is falling apart. Oh, there's nothing else I can do. When you can step back from that a step and say, okay, you know, it's all right. I've got other pairs of shoes. I can do that. But you have to understand, not having things in their place is really problematic for us because we really require that, or else we can't function. Go figure. That's our problem. Yada, yada. Sorry. Oh, that's another thing. Now, I like Weird Al Yankovic. And lately, we've been kind of on a Weird Al Yankovic kick. I think it started with me. I showed the kids a couple of Weird Al Yankovic videos. And we've just been, wah, Weird Al Yankovic. And I think the kids are already over with it and done. I'm not quite done with it yet. But I'm starting to think, you know what, Jay, you really should find something else to obsess about right now. And it may be ham radio soon. I don't know. We're going to find out. Anyway, so. Anyway, so I was using this ham scope, and it's been really, I haven't transmitted on it yet. It's going to take me some time to get to that point to where I can do it. But it sounds like people I can relate to. You know, they tend to be very business-like, which I tend to be. You know, I've always found I need to have some purpose in whatever I'm doing. That's why social settings don't work very well for me. Because it's like, well, it's okay, just kind of loosen up, be cool, take it easy. And it's like, I can't do that. Everything I'm doing has to have some purpose, has to be leading to something. Even to my, just to my intellectual enrichment, you know, so that's what kind of happened, you know. And that's probably where you know, they say, boy, you know, he could just walk in here and he could take the amateur radio test and he passed them. 1, 2, almost the third one, which is the last one after that. He can do everything, there's nothing else to do. You know, people are talking about, well, it's really important that you get your extra really fast, you know. And it's like, what? You know, extra doesn't really give you anything really special. I mean, there are some more frequencies you can be on, you can play with, but otherwise, extra doesn't give you any more capability particularly, you know. You can do all the different emissions. Now, the difference between technician and general is pretty broad. There's a whole bunch of things that you really can't do. So, you know, general is fine. I you know, it would just be for the cred thing and for $14 and sitting down for a little while and expanding my brain. I can get some more nerd cred. Cool. I can, you know, that doesn't cost much. You know, people say, well, I'm going to get all kinds of computer certifications. Those are okay, but they cost a ton. You know, if you're going to get your MCSE, and I imagine that if I put any kind of effort at all into getting my MCSE, I could. You know, that would. That's some cred that actually might pay you money, you know. It isn't quite what it was at one time, but, you know, who cares? The only problem is that costs some money, several hundred dollars in total to get up to that point. There's several tests you have to take over time, to get up to that point. The great part is I could probably get my work to pay for it. At least for the first effort. I think that would be pretty slick. So I might take advantage of that because, frankly, it's compatible with my job, and my job wouldn't even mind paying for it to get it done. Anyway, so. And, you know, who knows? I might get a chance for pay increases or, you know, get a promotion or two out of it. So it's not a bad idea. I may go after. I may just start cranking out certifications here. You know? Wouldn't hurt. Couldn't hurt. I think it'd be kind of cool to get my, you know, to get a more advanced degree. That might help me a bit too, you know. They might have to pay me more because they say, hey, he's got a master's degree in this, or he's got a PhD in that, you know. And of course, the whole nerd can't say, yes, I'm Dr. Nemro. That might be cool. I don't know. Although, I wouldn't want to get it in, like, computers. I would rather get it in, like, philosophy. I was looking at metaphysics, and it sounds like a joke. So it's almost like, well, I don't want to get a PhD in something that's a joke. I just want to get a PhD, a doctor of philosophy. So, well, philosophy of what? And you go, well, I don't know. You know. I want to get something that I feel like I'm really good at, that is really me. You know, people say, well, you should get into computers. And it's like, why? What would be the point of that? Well, then you could do this stuff all the time. You know, then I'd have to research, and I'd have to study, and yada, yada, yada. If I was going to get a PhD in that, I would rather get it based on something that maybe I've done. Not that I was going to study and learn about this thing and this thing and this thing. Anyway, so that's kind of where that's going. It's credentialing day. Dun 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 dun. See, now I'm doing the Weird Al Yankovic stuff. It's weasel stomping day. Sorry. Put your stomping boots on. Dun 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 dun. Hip hip hooray, it's weasel stomping day. Weasel stomping day. Dun 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 dun. Uh-oh, I've got a new thing from my uncle. Let's see what he says now. Okay, oh, it's still the all-in-tongue-in-cheek thing. Okay, that's cool. Alright, so, there it is. Okay. Should I explain? Yes! I should explain this because this is... if anybody keeps saying, well, Dave keeps calling it the life autistic, but I don't think he's very autistic. And he's like, no, let me tell you a circumstance that's very autistic. Okay? You know, and you go, well, it's a little esoteric, but you go, that's all autism is dealing with people who are really kind of get themselves into esoteric kind of situations. Okay, so here it is. Asperger-ish stuff, sorry. Okay, my mom sent me, forwarded me an email. Now, you have to know that getting forwarded emails, I think that's one of the banes of email. One of the things that where it really doesn't compare to normal mail, it says, making it so simple to just be able to forward something that gets sent to you onto 500 people is something that is turned into kind of a garbagey type thing. In fact, on my wife's email, Lisa's email, because she gets forwarded by a couple of people who just say, oh, this is cute, I'll forward it. Oh, this is cute, I'll forward it. You know, oh, I like this, I'll forward it. And I'd actually set up a filter on hers so that anytime it has, you know, SW colon in the subject line, which is the traditional way of indicating that something's been forwarded, that it'll just throw it into a folder, so that she doesn't have to ever see it. So that's kind of that's what I did for. I haven't done it for me yet because the few people who have tried to forward stuff to me, I've usually took them aside and said, I don't like forwarded mail. If you want to send me stuff and it's from you, that's great. I want to hear from you, but don't forward just crap to me that you think is cute or fun or thought, you know, even if it's thought-provoking. I would rather have your thoughts on it, not thoughts of the social to 5,000 people. Anyway, so my mother, God, Jay is the king of tangents. Sorry. My mother forwarded me an article from a newspaper. This had done the gauntlet, I think, because I thought it was only two steps, but then when I really looked at it, it was several billion steps away. Well, that's not true. It's probably three or four, which is actually quite unique. Usually when something shows up on my table, you know, finally, if I ever look at it at all, which I don't, it will have gone through 500 bumps, and I just ignore those things typically. But anyway, I decided in this case that I wasn't going to. I don't know if it was some kind of, spiritual nudging saying, come on, you need to read this one. But for some reason, I chose to read it, and it was an article. And at first blush, it was a rather conservative little op-ed piece, just with kind of a laundry list of things that most conservatives think would be the most wonderful thing to be done, and upon first reading, it was like, oh, okay, yeah, whatever. But then I actually read it again, and things were starting to bother me about it. And I don't really have the thing here, my response. Maybe I should. I could pull it up. Should I? Should I do it? Yeah, I got some time. You guys are just sitting there with nothing to do. Let me pull this baby up, since I'm on the road and I've got good cell signal and I can get access to this. Let's go ahead and do it. You know, you don't have these tools, this ability to get the internet just nearly anywhere, not to ever use it. So here I am, babbling, talking to you while I'm actually doing all the button pressing to get this done. Okay, it still says I have it. Ugh, that is annoying. like I'm locked in, or is David Brown just having fun just bouncing this to me all the time? Once I get to a decent place, I'm going to have to look it up and make it happen, baby. Okay, I need my scent mail. Oh wait, no I don't. Because it's under this. It's Weasel Stomping Day! Okay, here's the whole big thing. Where he said basically, I was just kidding, guy, don't get all over me. And it's like, what? Which is what made it autistic. After I did this whole thing, he sent back things about the fact that I was acting like a libertine But apparently it was all a joke. And of course, one of the hallmarks of being autistic, of course you have to understand, email almost makes everybody feel a little autistic. That's why email is so appealing to people like me, because then everybody's on the same standing as I am. Everybody looks autistic in email. You can't express your emotions properly. Everybody misinterprets what you say, and you go, finally, you're feeling what I feel like in normal life. Okay, title of my thing is, it sounds good at first hearing. Okay, so, blah, blah, blah. I talk about all this stuff. I explain my politics. I don't need to explain my politics to you guys. I think you guys kind of have that down. Anyway, this article was written by a lady. I think it was in, like, the Amarillo Globe News, which is a town that's only about 100 miles from where I live. Buckle of the Bible Belt type thing. Conservative to a fault, but not very, but, not very intelligently conservative. Their parents were conservatives, their parents were conservatives, that kind of thing. Hasn't really been thought through, and she was mostly just throwing out things that made her upset, and since she is a multi-generational conservative, it's going to be that way. And of course, you know that even though I have many conservative leanings, I am very much a libertarian, but anyway. And that's because of thinking about it. My parents weren't particularly libertarian. So I'm definitely breaking with tradition. Okay, let me see. I'm going to get down here. Because the whole point about this is either almost everything that she put down on this thing was either impossible or had so many unintended consequences that you should just avoid it. Okay, and I'll talk about each one as we get there. Oops, it's more pages. This is a 7-page email, just in case you were wondering. The thing I got was just this little thing, and of course, Jay can't do anything but try to be very verbose. And I don't think I did a good enough job. I may have to break everything down piece by piece by piece and make a whole website out of it. This lady who wrote this article should be so pleased that there might be a whole website dedicated to saying, I don't think that's a good idea either. Yeah, I don't think that's a good idea either, on every single point she had. Okay, it says it's locating. Uh-oh. I hope I can get it. It says I've got 4 bars. The whole first part of the article was mostly about what was wrong with Congress and how we needed to reform Congress. Anytime you want to mess with Congress, though, and make them behave a certain way or do stuff like that, it either has to be done internally by Congress itself, kind of internal rules, or you're going to have to do it by the Constitution. And so by its nature, it really isn't going to happen. Like she's all in favor of term limits. Term limits have tons of unintended complications to them. It doesn't fix anything. It just changes everything. And I think one of the biggest problems that putting term limits on, like, say, senators and congressmen is that the parties will be more powerful. Right now, you have kind of a little power struggle that always goes on in Congress, which is between the party's will and the will of individual legislators. As you serve several terms in Congress and as you become more proficient at navigating the waters there, you can figure out ways, if you want to go against the party, to say, no, I'm going to do this, even though the party doesn't want me to, I'm going to go ahead and do it. There may be repercussions, but, you know, that's okay. You know, parties play the game that says, we'll help you get into office, and in exchange for helping you get into office, you are to do our will. And by and large, that's true. You know, but once you get a little bit more time in, once you get a little more savvy, once you get a little more powerful, you start to understand that you don't always have to do what the party says. And when you do something, you know, the party may choose to privately or to publicly pillory you about one thing or another, but that you can also exercise some power over the party, too. You know, the party isn't this total other entity. Once you get into Congress, once you indicate that you are able to keep your seat, you also become a powerful part of the party. You can almost start to kind of affect changes. Now, the parties don't want to change particularly unless circumstances just demand it. Anyway, so this was all kind of talked about as just kind of a thing about saying, you know, you could put term limits on it, but that would mean that powerful people that maybe actually be good, if you like your federal legislators, you want to keep them in office as long as you can. Changing every two or three sessions just because you have to isn't necessarily good. If you got somebody good, you want to keep them in there, right? Now, the whole question of, well, is that really good or is that really not? And you go, you know, nailing us down to having to behave a certain way by law isn't as good as saying, hey, you know, I get more freedom if I'm not constrained to re-elect somebody. There was a whole other issue about that. If you put term limits on people, those people are less likely to do what you want because, you know, half the time they're not going to be running for re-election. They don't have to keep you happy. They can do, you know, they can be about other people's issues, you know. You know, once I stop being in Congress because I can only be in for, like, say, two terms, you know, I haven't had a regular job in 4 years. You know, if you were employed by somebody, you had to lose that job to go to Congress. You know, I need to come up with something else. I've got all this experience in politics now. You know, I think it's time to become a lobbyist. And that guy will spend his last 2 or 4 or 6 years or whatever not working to try to keep your favor, but trying to, you know, trying to find his next job, perhaps. You know, I want to be a lobbyist, so I'm going to start campaigning hard to find a job for me as a lobbyist. Is that in the favor of their constituency? Probably not. You know, it's certainly in the interest of whoever's going to ultimately get them as a lobbyist. So yeah, you go, those are two unintended consequences. You guys think that you're going to really put a stake in the heart of, like, corruption. And you go, no, you're not. You aren't going to touch corruption. Trust me. You can't kill corruption, and you can't really slow it down. All you can do is change the rules of how one gets corrupted, And this introduces so many more good reasons to be corrupted. So yeah, term limits for senators and federal representatives, bad idea. You know, bad idea. Almost everything it gets down to try to solve one problem creates two or three more. So by and large, it's like, you know, if we could freeze things in place, that would be wonderful. Honestly. But you can't. You know, it's not, you can't make that happen. You can do that in a way by splitting things in two, you know. If you have a Democratic led Congress, you make a Republican the president. And that kind of slows things down. You can't just proceed at full speed. Right now we don't have that situation. You know, the golden child Obama, I call him the golden child for the simple reason that he's kind of like that the kid in that movie, you know. He's sweet, he's nice, he's innocent, and as clean as the new driven snow, sort of. And people just love that kind of an image. And that's how, I think that's one of the big reasons why he got to be president. Now, we don't know what he's going to do ultimately, because who knows, you know. Just like that Golden Child movie, you know. He became the golden, you know, he became the great Swami of whatever, sorry, that's really the wrong term, it's rude, but he became the leader of this monastery where he was supposed to be taken to, or whatever he was supposed to do, to make the world a better place and set everything right. But we don't know what he did after that. And, well, we're going to find out now. Once you put a child... Because he does. He sounds like a child. It's very appealing, you know. He has very fourth grade child morals, which are very black and white, which are very, you know, oh, well, can't we make the world a better place, you know? Because they've been sitting in a schoolroom listening to teachers chant kumbaya all the time. And, you know, for an 8-year-old, we want to make the world look like a wonderful place. Just when it's starting to make a little bit of sense, then you start finding out that there's evil and there's wickedness but only later as you mature do you find out that there's very little you can do about it without making your life miserable too. That's where libertarianism is a very evolved way of thinking, because adults tend to think that way. It's a very adult way of thinking. You know, he's all about, you know, we're going to destroy evil, and I bet you we can do it in 8 years if you give me a chance. And it's like, you're not going to destroy evil in 8 years. You can't do it. You can't legislate evil's destruction. Going into politics with that kind of an attitude is childish. But from every appearance, that's at least how he looked on the campaign trail. Don't really know how he's going to react in a real circumstance, because we've never seen him in a real circumstance. Anyway, so. Alright, that was the first thing. Next thing was, come on. Okay, term limits already beat that into the ground. Lame ducks. Yeah, I already talked to you a little bit about lame ducks, about the fact that they're more likely to do radical things, or things that are self-serving, or that set them up for their next career, rather than trying to keep you happy. You know. Even if you feel like your senator or your congressman isn't working particularly in your favor, he probably will be working for the majority of people in your district, even though that may not represent you, he's not going to do something patently stupid, patently troublesome, because he always has to run for re-election. That need to constantly run for re-election is the powerful thing that keeps that person in check. when you take that away with term limits, you know, the fact that he can run for, you know, he can have two terms, but that second term, he's going to be doing something, and he doesn't have to worry about his constituency, because who cares? They can't even, you know, you don't have to keep them happy. They're not voting for you again. You can do whatever you want. Kind of like when a president is a lame duck, you'll see them doing the kinds of things that they promised they would do. You know, if somebody contributed largely to their campaign and their husband or their wife got thrown into prison because they were corrupt, evil, nasty people, there's a reasonable chance that president, when not faced with having to deal with getting reelected, he's going to pardon them. Happens all the time. Happens almost every time. You know, everybody says, oh yeah, here comes the season of pardons. It's coming up for George Bush now. George Bush is now starting to take a strong look at who's going to be pardoned. Who he's going to give things to. You know, and you expect it, because that's what lame ducks will do. This is, think of how much bad things happen when one guy is a lame duck. Imagine if you gave it to, you know, 200 people who would be lame ducks at least once every 4 years, or once every 12 years in the case of a senator. You know, you're going to have a whole bunch of people just sitting there going, you know what, I don't give a flip. It doesn't matter to me. I don't have to get reelected. I'm going to do something that either really pays me back in spades. You'll be having these guys bought off like nobody's business, chafing at the wonderful possibilities of, hey, let's put term limits on there. But because the entrenched guys in there don't want term limits, their power, what happens to them, and how they're able to affect things is because there aren't term limits, it's not going to happen. But if it did happen, it would be a horrible thing. So they're not fighting for it. Only problem is the American dolts, maybe that's what I should start calling the American people, just call them the American dolts, may get talked into it if they don't think about it. That's why we have to constantly talk about it and say, you know what, we just need to stick with the problems that we already know. You know, if somebody does something that we don't like, we can get enough people together, we can get them out of office. That's your freedom. Use it. Instead of trying to find ways to make your situation better, don't try. You'll not like it. Okay, next one. Uh-oh, I'm starting to get out of self-strange. Then the whole thing was, I'm sorry, about sour grapes. You know, Congress gets to vote itself a pay increase. We shouldn't let them do that. The big question after that is, how would you do it differently? There is already a check to them going crazy with that and just making themselves all billionaires. It is that the president can veto it. Of course, they always put pay increases in with another bill that's almost guaranteed to pass. That's how you do that. And that nobody has a problem with. They said, oh, this is the perfect one to shove our pay increase on. I do think there's some rule that they can only do it once a term. Of course, I think almost every term they tend to do it. I don't know. Anyway, you would have to change the Constitution to get that done. Or, well, no, I don't know if that's really necessary. You know, but you have to get the president to go along with it. If you were really going to change it and say, well, you know, maybe we should let the people say whether they should be able to do it. So, number one, that's dumb. You've realized that doesn't mean that there will never be another pay increase. There will always be pay increases. Because the congressmen and the senators will actually become more corrupt to get you to do it. They will, you know, they will promise the poor people. If you're a Democrat, you promise poor people the moon, and they'll deliver for you. If you're a Republican, you promise business leaders, you promise small business people, you promise people who really want to get rich and get ahead, and they'll deliver for you too. I said, so you know what? It's just dumb. And you might probably will have to do, you probably don't have to do constitutional amendments, but you might have to. You know, who would determine when they were allowed to have one? Would you make like the government accounting office say that it has to be some kind of a percentage of the GDP? You know, if that one's intriguing, but the problem is the government has shown that it's already very good at cooking the books. You know, things can be off budget all the time. They can, you know, Bill Clinton famously, you know, he says, I balanced the budget, woohoo, we're in a surplus. No, we weren't. We weren't in a surplus. Those guys changed the accounting rules of it to make it look like there was a surplus. There never was a surplus. Of course, now even under those cooked books, those new rules, we still don't look at it, which means it's twice as bad now. But, yeah, it was never there in the first place. I mean, you can say so. Boy, we really did that. And you go, no, they just changed the rules to make it look like they did. That was just an interesting new twist on it that Clinton just came up with, or his people actually came up with. Anyway, okay, so let's see here. Did we get the yeah, we did. Okay. The very thin-veiled attack on Congress. Lame duck. We didn't do it. It didn't happen. Okay, maybe it'll happen this time. Maybe I'll do it right this time. What was it? Just kind of a litany of sour grapes. If I can't do that, we shouldn't let them do it. They would have to have the same kind of health care that most people do. You know, for being a conservative, these were very kind of these were kind of penny-ante little kind of stuff that liberals would throw at, like big business. This lady's now throwing it at big government. And it's like, it's not going to solve anything. You're going to spend all of your political will making them change insurance carriers? God, what a stupid waste of time! That's not the problem! You know, boy, that's really good, you know. And she always painted as if, boy, if they just felt our pain a little, they would have some political will to fix our problems. And it's like, you know, this lady is not even a very good conservative. She should trade in her conservative badge for something else. This is dumb. It was about insurance. It was about pay. It was about their retirement package. I think there was four. There's the pay raise. Anyway, it was stuff like that. It was just penny-ante little, mostly internal congressional stuff, and she wanted it to be put there, be a stop put to it. And you go, you know, in order to do that, you would probably have to put something into the Constitution to start dinking around with the inner workings of Congress. And then you have to say, well, okay, you know, how do you do that? Of course, the whole idea was, let's have a national referendum. Which was actually the last thing I ended up talking about, which was the ultimately stupid idea. It actually negates government altogether, and not in a good way. You know, people would say, oh, but you're a libertarian. Wouldn't you love the power just to really sock it to government? And you go, but what would that ultimately win me? Says, I might win on one or two referendum issues, but other people would win on all the rest. And that would make government even worse. I called it a fast a fast poison. You know, you drink it and you almost immediately die. You know, right now what we have with Congress is slow poison. It's slow because part of the way the system was created was that it would go kind of slow. Everybody knows that, you know, once evil starts to figure out how you take advantage of things, it starts taking advantage of things. When evil gets into enough power to start affecting things itself, not just having to live within the rules, but actually being able to change the rules any way it wants, then it goes a little faster. You know, ultimately, the country will be lost. It's just a question of when. You know, some people say, let's do it now. And you go, well, you know, maybe, maybe not. I don't know. I would just as soon have it go slow as opposed to, you know, knocking down that poison as fast as you can and killing yourself. It's just like drinking. Drinking is slow poison. Everybody says that, right? It's slow poison. And you go, well, you know what? That's more interesting than fast poison. I don't sit here with a shot glass with, like, arsenic in it. Boop, and that's it. Dead, you know. So which is better, slow or the fast? You go, well, that's totally up to you. I guess if you're suicidal, fast is what you want. I don't want to be suicidal yet. It's tempting. I won't say it's not tempting to commit national suicide. I'm not going to kill myself. I'm going to watch everybody else kill themselves. I'm already coming up with my escape plan. And it's really not about going somewhere. It's just about setting up circumstances so that when the government falls apart and destroys our economy with it because they've been so married to each other, that I don't die. I'm getting to the point to where I'm going to say, well, I'm going to have all this stuff worked out. It's going to go great. Anyway, so, let me see, did I get this thing down a little bit? Okay, there's insurance, there's retirement. Okay, then comes the illegal alien thing. I think the whole issue of illegal aliens and what you do about them is stupid. As a libertarian, I say, why not just open up the borders? You know, the border exists, in my mind, for one purpose. The border just says, this is a line that our military will not cross. When we start sending our military out under the auspice of defending us, which is what we do right now, we occupy and try to control as much as we can Iraq and Afghanistan, among other things. We pretty much control Europe too. They kind of thumb their noses at us, but let me tell you, when we put the squeeze on them, they do what they're told. We are actually extending our borders. Actually, we are pushing our foreign policy on them, which is basically the same thing. You know, when we talk about our foreign policy, that is our imperialism showing through. You know, we expect the parts of the world that we control to behave this way or that way. You know. And so honestly, we really don't have a border. It looks silly when we do so much to control how things go. We constantly bail out Mexico, and it's mostly to say, well, we don't want so many of them coming up here. We'll bail them out in the hopes that that their economy will rise to the point that that they'll have just as good a life there as they would have here, and then they won't try to cross the border. And you're going, well, then basically we're kind of annexing Mexico when we do that. It just becomes part of the United States. And then what's the point of having the border anyway? have it be the, you know, the slums of America. What's the problem? Doesn't bother me any. We're trying hard to be the world government anyway. So why not just do it? Of course, we don't want to, you know, we talk about being the world government, the world police officer, but we don't really want to be. Sort of. We sort of do, but we sort of don't. It's really nice to be able to get pissy and angry at the UN for things that it does. You know, it's always nice to have some kind of a whipping boy, and that's what the UN typically is for the United States, is the whipping boy. If there's something that we don't want to feel responsible for, we can recuse ourselves. Well, that's not our concern. You go, well, you're the world's police officer. Why don't you go handle it? Oh, no, we don't want to. You know, we love being the world's cop when we can get filthy rich or something like that off of it. But if we don't see any great benefit for us, we'll choose not to. You know, it's kind of, well, let's just play the convenience card. Nobody really wants a world government. There's a few people that talk about a world government and how wonderful that would be. But you know what? The people who are really in power want nothing to do with it. If you read the book like 1984 by George Orwell, the world is really divided up into three huge mega countries, and it's done that way on purpose. Three is the beautiful number. You always have one enemy, you always have one friend, you know, and you always have a whipping boy. You can always tell people, oh, here's a great reason to you know, you're always in perpetual war, because perpetual war keeps people's minds on something, keeps them all very nationalistic, keeps them very yada yada, you know. There's 10 or 15 really excellent reasons why you need to have the world split up into basically three parts. Those three parts have to be in collusion with each other all the time. They need to get together and talk about what they're going to do. There always needs to be somebody that you're allied with and somebody that you're against. There always needs to be a war going on, because wars are excellent. You know, you can send dissidents off to wars and fight wars, and they can conveniently die. And nobody gets weird about it. There is no court to set up. There's no, you know, war is a fantastic place just to handle what we would consider to be excess population, I suppose. I don't think of people that way, hopefully. But, you know, governments think in those lines, you know. It sure would be easier to govern things if we didn't have all these people, you know. We could solve the unemployment problem by sending most of those people off to war, stick a gun in their hand, and let them get killed. We haven't gotten to that point yet, but we're getting closer every day. The illegal alien problem is silly. We don't have to seal up our borders, because you can't. You can't seal up the borders. I don't care how big of a wall you put around the United States. What that wall also does is it means that you keep people in. If people want to leave, it makes it more difficult. You can't just leave. Now, we're not to that point exactly yet, but we could get there. It'd be really easy just to say, hey, you know, we've got a lot of people that are now rebelling. There is already a definite split in our country. And there's been a little bit of talk about secession. It's tempting, it's alluring, but that could be a whole other reason for setting up this wall, is saying they can't leave. And we'll put all of our military power into making sure that people don't secede, you know. The Civil War was not a civil war. It was a war between the states. Some states didn't like the way things were going and wanted to affect being their own country, which under normal circumstances is not a problem. But somebody started saying that, no, we're in this together, and by golly, What that means is you can't leave. So that's what it is. So when they talk about the wall, there's two reasons for having the wall. One of them is to keep out those smelly, dirty, disgusting, disease-ridden Mexicans, which is patently untrue. But that's where all that rhetoric is. And it gets said at different times, different things. Well, they're poor and they're disgusting and we don't like them. They come up here and they do distasteful jobs. And then we get weird about the fact that we think we should have Americans doing distasteful jobs that Americans don't want to do. Right? It's not going to be a moot point pretty soon. We're going to soon be like European countries where these things are, you know, where they're practically, now they're trying to do it in a controlled way. They don't want to get criminals and stuff like that in their thing. But they're basically enticing common labor type people to come in and work for them. I've been tempted to take advantage of something that Sweden or the Netherlands are up to in saying, hey, you know, we want people to move here. Young people, because they're getting very gentrified and their pension plan is just amazingly, you know, and their pension plan is getting kicked in the butt because your pension plan depends on the fact that you've got lots of kids that are working. Right now they don't. Everybody's retiring and expecting their pension, by golly. And so they're having to bring in people, mostly from the Middle East, you know. The Netherlands in a generation is going to be a Middle Eastern country. It's going to be full of Muslims because they have to do it that way. I've been tempted to take it, but frankly, I don't want to live in a socialized country particularly. Only if they would offer me freedom, and they can't do that because if they were to free me, they'd feel compelled to free other people too. And other people don't want freedom. They like the free stuff they get that's basically sucked out of their economy. Anyway, so da 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 da. Oh, I'll take this parking spot right here. That'll work good. Let's see, what else do we have here? Oof. That's about all I can get to. Are those two? We will come back. Hopefully, I'll try to remember that I had gotten to at least illegal aliens. Hope they won't have much more to say about them. And we'll go from them next time. This is episode number 724. The big email. Then we'll talk about what kind of trouble it got me into as an autistic person. And this is Jay Nemerow. Have a great day. Oops. Where's my thing? Okay. I think I can go like this and get it done. Right? Nope. That didn't work. Where's my... There it is. Okay.